Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak. My guest, Megan Leahy, is the On Parenting columnist for The Washington Post. She's a certified parenting coach. And Megan says, and we know this if we're parents, that we live in a culture obsessed with our children and our own outcomes. So we're highly susceptible to anxiety and perfectionism. Megan is here to assuage our worries and overwhelm with her new book, Parenting Outside the Lines, Forget the Rules, Tap into Your Wisdom, and Connect with Your Child. Megan Leahy, welcome to The Mountain Life. It's great to have you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate your time.
Well, you know, easier said than done. Forget the rules, tap into your wisdom, and connect with your child. I feel like we often say that we want to go on intuition, and after all, none of us knew how to be parents before we were. So in large part, we have to tap into it, but we are so thrown off by what people tell us, the parenting books out there. So how are you going to take us outside the lines?
You know, I wrote the book using all of the topics and themes that parents come to me with over years and years and years, hundreds and hundreds of parents. And instead of applying just like, well, do this, make a chart for this, do this next, 5 easy ways, 10 hard ways, whatever, I wanted to end each chapter with thoughtful questions to get to the root of how the parent feels about certain subjects. And, you know, it may be clearer for some parents than others, it may be easier, it may be harder. Whatever the case is, I just want parents to look for the answers more inside themselves rather than picking up like yet another book, ironically, or reading yet another blog. Because ultimately, you know your kids best, even if that's imperfectly, which of course it is. But, you know, when I work with parents, they're the expert of their children. I just know theory, right? And so I just wanted parents to feel like, hey, even when I don't think I got this, I got this.
Right. Well, and it starts at such an early age. And I know we all have these stories, but I think of my poor dear mother who, upon the birth of my older brother, who was the first, she had been told by her mother that you let the baby cry, you only feed them at 1, 5, and 9 or whatever it was. And
right.
Consequently, my poor brother, she felt like he starved as an infant. And I have my own stories, and I'm sure you do as well, those things that we thought we were going to do. And some of us diverged because we said, wait a minute, best laid plans go out the window. Others thought, well, I won't be a perfect parent unless I adhere to these things. What are those signals that we should take from what's going on every day with our children that would tell us whether to chuck the plans or to adhere?
You know, it's funny, especially with that example about feeding and letting cry, because parenting has become so mental and data-driven and thought-based and neuroscience-y, which, by the way, I love all of that and tend toward all of it. But we forget that we actually live in our bodies. And the sweating that occurs when you hear your baby screaming for you, right? The letdown of milk, the panic we feel, even when you're in a grocery store and you hear another person's baby screaming,
yeah,
right?
Right.
We are naturally drawn to pick up that baby, right? So yeah. I often think that our bodies tell us what we need to do, if that makes any sense. Now, what is confusing about that is based on how you were raised, you could be getting some wrong signs, right? If you were taught, for instance, I write in the book, I have a big chapter about siblings fighting. And if you were raised to be conflict avoidant,
Right.
Like all fights are a threat to the system, you could start having like panic issues around your kids having normal fights, normal disagreement. And that's a case where your body is sending you a message that you need to look at. In any case, our bodies tell us what we need to look at.
Okay, so we have our body sort of responding in this way that doesn't feel right. But how do we do the check and balance, you know, from our mind? it's such a hard question to know, like, is that, am I being told this by myself, by my intuition, because it's right? Or is this right. coming from a place that I need to develop a new standard for? Like, you know, like if, yeah. If we avoid any controversy and therefore our children fighting is coming up and we're thinking we want to help them avoid that. But on the other hand, you know, some of that is healthy.
Yeah. So I, you know, in the book, I'm over and over asking parents, because inevitably every parent, including myself, right? My kids fight all the time, or my kid's a brat all the time. And so I'll be like, 24 hours a day? Well, no. Okay, when they're even just awake? Well, no, right? And so what we begin to do is we take the global awfulization, and then we put that aside, and then we begin to look at the actual patterns and pain points in the day or in those certain moments, right? Oh, okay, well, actually, my kids just fight when they try to share toys when I have to work. Or my kids just fight when it's somebody else's turn to pick a movie. Mm-hmm. And what we can do is, and what we do in the book is look at, okay, how can we proactively look at that instead of just reacting with what isn't working? You know, go to your room, no more technology. Why do you always fight with your brother? You should know better. All the things we say. You know, it's funny because I'm simultaneously asking parents to trust their gut and then also telling them sometimes your gut sends you the wrong way. It's the paradox of kind of being alive.
Yeah, yeah.
And parenting's not different.
Yeah. If you're just joining me, my guest is Megan Leahy. Her new book is called Parenting Outside the Lines. Forget the rules, tap into your wisdom, and connect with your child. So forgetting the rules, it's funny. I looked at my own kids. I didn't have a plan for, you know, where they were going to sleep or how we were going to do those nighttime things. And it turns out, and I'm a little embarrassed to admit it, but my kids are very well adjusted and healthy individuals at this point. But we just did the family bed. And yet they did not sleep through the night, I swear, until they were like 3 years old, probably because of that. And my next door neighbor just recently had a baby, and she tells me how the baby sleeps from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. And I was thinking, oh, it's probably because they don't do anything. You know, they're not sleeping with the baby. And so you think, oh, if I had to do it over again, I might choose differently. And yet the result is something that worked for you. So when you're checking your own self against your parenting, again, I guess I'm kind of asking the same question, is how do you know if it worked?
You know, if you're stressed about something, and trust me, here's the hysterical thing about sleeping in particular for anybody listening. Every single parent calls me and like whispers into my phone. My five-year-old gets into bed with me every night. I have a three-year-old on the floor sleeping in a sleeping bed. My kid gets up. My kid does this. I fall asleep with my kid every night. I did it. Right. And everybody else thinks that's not happening in everybody else's home. Right. So I'm really the person, right, that gets to see behind the curtain.
Okay.
Right. Everybody's having a wild time of it. And partly this is due to the crazy schedules we keep as families. Part of it is because little kids aren't biologically set up to sleep alone, especially if they've been away from their caregiver all day. Sleeping mm-hmm. with your parent, you smell them, which mm-hmm. is our strongest sense. You hear their heartbeat, you feel it, right? Like it's an ultimate limbic system relaxer. It's the same reason why we love getting into bed with our spouse if we love them. So why wouldn't kids want that? So there's nothing abnormal or wrong about it. And it can get to a point where it disrupts everyone and goes too far. Somehow everyone makes it through. Like somehow parents don't go to college with their kids and sleep in their beds with them. So you know, you kind of have to have a sense of humor. You kind of have to see how you really feel about it. And if you just want to let it be, and you kind of have to be ready for some tears if you need to eventually draw a boundary.
I like that. That works.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if both in your book and also in your Washington Post column on parenting, if we're starting to look, you know, we've talked a lot in sort of over the last couple of years about teaching empathy, that it's a skill that needs to be and can be taught to children. And I'm wondering if some of the parenting, the questions that seem sort of like small questions, if we can look at them more globally by encouraging parents towards things like that, teaching empathy. Well, that will take care of, you know, bullying, or that will take care of incessant fighting with their siblings, things like that. Are there global approaches that you espouse during, you know, in your article and your book?
No.
Oh, darn.
The only global idea that I espouse 24/7 is the connection you have with your child.
Love them. Love them, love them, huh?
Right. So you need a warm, compassionate, boundaried relationship, which is as simple as it sounds and as hard as it sounds. And the funny thing with empathy is that you cannot teach empathy until the brain is ready to learn it. Mm-hmm. So you have to bring that child to that place of maturity for them to learn it. Yet at the same time, you can still be role modeling it to prime the pump. You know, you can teach things all day, and if the kid's not ready, the kid's not ready. And yet at the same time, we want to often teach things that we are not role modeling ourselves.
True. I was just saying this last night to someone, you know, that thing, I don't know if your mother said this to you, but mine did. And I always called her out on it, that do as I say, not as I do. I mean, do all parents say that? I just think that is the worst. Like, how we, of course we're going to do as you do, because that's what you've modeled for us.
Of course. And it's really hysterical because, you know, I will, like, you know, scream at another driver while I'm in the car, right? Not down with the window, or just in my car with myself. And, you know, I'll say to the kids, don't do that. So to some extent, every parent does it because we're human. And of course, we want our kids to be better, and they won't. Just, they'll just be bad in their own ways. But it never works. You know, I worked for an organization that help parents, and it said kids are keen observers and poor interpreters.
Oh, I like that.
So they see, hear, and feel it all. They're taking it all in, but they just don't always know what it all means. So the most important thing, especially during the pandemic, is for the parent to be as healthy as they can, be role modeling what frustration and joy looks like in a pandemic. Mm-hmm. So to say, like, wow, I am really feeling frustrated today because I had certain goals and they're not happening. And I wanted to go outside with you guys and it's raining and I could just scream, right? That is way healthier than just like slamming the cupboards for 20 minutes because the kids don't know what's wrong.
Exactly. This brings me to something that I never knew exactly how far to take it. When parents make mistakes, mm-hmm. how to communicate those mistakes to your children? Because on the one hand, you don't want your child to think it's okay to go around making mistakes. On the other hand, you want your child to think that it's human and we all make mistakes and we can learn from them. And maybe I didn't explain that very well, but when it comes to that realm, how much do we share with our kids?
I think it, you know, it depends, right? If you're always better off with honesty, always, right? Most of the problems in families and shame and weird secrecy and dysfunction don't come from the actual problem. It comes from the cover-up. Mm-hmm. right? It comes from whispers and lies and whisper down the lane and whatever, right? And avoidance. So I'm a big keep it appropriate and keep it honest, right? And during this pandemic and just in parenting in general, the mistakes, the outbursts, the problems are going to be numerous and frequent. And so I encourage parents to just very simply apologize. I have huge chapters on apologizing, on how to give and receive an apology. And I think that if we could role model that and teach our kids how to give and receive an apology, I mean, we could like literally change the world.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that leads me also, Megan, as we are looking at going back to school in one way or another, depending on, you know, where you live and your school district and your state, it's a little bit of a mess. Okay, it's a big bit of a mess. And what advice would you give to parents? I think that, I mean, I've been hearing lots of parents sort of bashing the school district and the superintendent and talking about how horrible this is going to be. And the reality is no one knows how to do this. This is unprecedented. No one knows, not the school board, not the superintendent, not the parents, not the students. And yet, how should we maintain a face of optimism and like we're all in this together and we're going forward? What do you tell parents now?
Parents are behaving like that because they're scared.
Yeah.
And some of their fears are completely valid. Some of them are just because they're over activated from watching or the news or staying too connected into social media and things like that, right? But everyone has fear, of their kids falling behind, fear of getting sick, fear of getting people they love sick, fear of their kids socially, fear of themselves socially, whatever. So I invite every parent to really write down, what are my actual fears, right? What am I actually afraid of? So that they have clarity around what they're actually having reactions to. And, you know, how they can either create a solution, grieve the solution they cannot create, find another way, give it up, become an advocate, whatever it is, right? Just get clear on it, because the anger is cancerous for your family. And everyone is falling behind at the same time. Everyone is having a gap year. I don't care if your kids, if your kids are going to school, you know, 5 days a week, it is not going to be the same. So, you know, everyone needs to remember we are all in this together for good or bad, right? And our kids are going to really pick up how to be from us. We don't need to be perfect. We're allowed to be angry. We're allowed to be sad. But we can also decide to face it with a little more equanimity and hope.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, it's funny. I heard someone say the other day, and my kids are at, they're out of school and out of college and everything. So I don't have to face this, which makes me so thankful. And so I really feel for all of you that are in this, whether you're an educator or a parent or a child or anything. But someone said, who cares if they graduate from high school when they're 19? Most of them aren't mature enough to go off to college anyway at age 18. So it's fine. And I loved that sort of letting go.
Yes.
And like
I think COVID is really showing us how much of what we think is important is arbitrary.
Yes.
Really, truly, like we have set up some insane systems that are neither here nor there. And I'm mostly concerned for the kids that were in crisis before COVID.
Mm-hmm.
It's not great. We don't want our kids in our face 24/7, but we will find a way to make it through because humans have done harder things. So we'll get there. And, you know, I just hope everyone can get there with a little sense of humor and a lot of compassion.
Lots and lots of compassion. It's true. Well, the book is Parenting Outside the Lines, Forget the Rules, Tap into Your Wisdom, and Connect with Your Child. And Megan, before I let you go, can you give us a few tips on that bad word, entitlement? How do we work to make our kids less entitled?
Oh, God, that's so hard. You know, if you live a very privileged life, you're going to have to put in measures that maybe life would not necessarily give you naturally to make your kids work, earn things, and most importantly, lose them. That is painful, but it's something that is mindful to do. And because we're all at home and because there's so much housework to be done, it's a great place for it. I wouldn't suggest blowing up the family for it right now. You know, we're like really kind of just doing the best we can. But there are tremendous amounts of volunteerism available right now. There is so much work to be done in any arena you can imagine and doing it safely that, you know, I would call a family meeting, depending on the ages of your kids, and pick one thing you're going to work on this fall. Mm-hmm. From the littlest to the biggest, it can help, you know, turn your kids just from what they're losing, what they're missing, how they're affected.
You know, for the little ones, making sure they know trash day is Wednesday. For the big ones, you know, working in a food pantry or something like that. I really like all of your examples, and especially, you know, looking at the wisdom that we bring forth for different ages. Megan Leahy is the author of Parenting Outside the Lines. She's also a columnist for the Washington Post. Her column is On Parenting. You can find her there. Megan, thanks so much for joining me on The Mountain Life. It's been great having you.
Thank you so much for your time, and stay safe.
Thank you. You too.